Okay, so tonight we are going to pick up at the beginning of the Gemara on Beis HaMabeis. Just to recap, last week we took a look at the first few lines in the Mishnah, and we did not really get way beyond that. We spent time on Rashi, spoke about what Gezelos mean, but essentially after a brief introduction, we saw that the Mishnah tells us that there are situations that require three judges, specifically Dine Mamonos B'Shlosha, and Gezelos V'Chavelos B'Shlosha, matters dealing with theft and injuries. Both of those areas of din require three judges. And the Gemara now on Beis HaMabeis is going to pick up right from that first part of the Mishnah. Later, please God, as we make our way through the Gemara, we'll go back to the Mishnah to refer to the additional cases that will come up. Now, just a word of introduction before we begin learning tonight's Gemara. Our approach tonight is going to be a little different than last week. Last week we were very focused initially on just several words, and we were able to spend a lot of time on that. Tonight, I think it's necessary for us to sort of get a bird's eye view of the sugi in general. That's a good way to learn. It's not always the methodology that we use in this particular shiur. Tonight, I think that there's no real great alternative. So what we're going to do is we're going to work our way down this entire Amud and a little bit onto the next page, Gimel and Aleph, and then we're going to come back. We'll see what we can take care of tonight, and probably for several weeks ahead, we're going to spend a little more time on some of the finer points on this Amud. But we're just going to take a look at the bigger picture over here. So the Gemara begins by asking a very simple question, which opens up a very profound set of discussions. Atu gezelus o chavelos lav li dine mamonos ninhu. So the Gemara, why is it necessary for the Mishnah to go ahead and to speak about dine mamonos and then gezelus o chavelos as two separate groups? After all, says the Gemara, gezelus o chavelos, are they not dine mamonos? Dine mamonos means literally money matters, right? All civil matters, matters having to do, disputes between people that that involve money. Gezelos, obviously theft, matters of theft. We discussed last week different types of theft. And chavalos, personal injuries, are all included in dine mamonos. So for the sake of brevity, the Mishnah could have simply said, dine mamonos b'shlosha, and that's it. There would have been no need to say gezelos or chavalos. So that's the Gemara's question. Also, gezelos or chavalos, lav dine mamonos nehu? So Amar Ravahu gives the following answer. Mahein katoni. What the Mishnah is doing is the Mishnah is clarifying what types of dine mamonos require three judges. Mahin dine mamonos, gezelos v'chavelos. The types of dine mamonos that require three judges are specifically gezelos v'chavelos, aval hados v'chavelos, lo. However, there are other types of dine mamonos that do not require three judges. What do they require? Fewer judges or judges of lower caliber, we'll see in a moment. But apparently, Ravol suggests that not all dine mamonos are treated the same way. There's gezelos v'chavelos, and then there's hados v'chavelos. Had the Mishnah, the Gemara now goes on to say, tricha, the itana dine mamonos, had it only said dine mamonos in the Mishnah and nothing else, havamina, so naturally I would have thought, dafilo hados v'chavelos, that this includes all types of dine mamonos, not only matters of theft, but even hodos v'havos. What are hodos v'havos? What does that mean? We'll translate it literally, and we'll take a look at Rashi in a moment. Hodos literally means admissions, and havos means loans. So we're just expanding, for the moment, you know, the range of possibilities of what's included in dine mamonos. We have gezelos v'havos, and we also have hodos v'havos. So dine mamonos, in a general sense, includes all of that. So it says Ravo, had the Mishnah only stated dine mamonos, that would have been misleading, because we would have thought that three judges of a certain type would be necessary to adjudicate all matters of the mamonos, even hados v'chavelos. So says the Gemara, then why not just say gezelos v'chavelos? You know, the Masechta Sanhedrin would start gezelos v'chavelos b'shlosha, and you don't have to say dine mamonos at all. So says the Gemara, if you tana gezelos v'chavelos, had it only said gezelos v'chavelos v'lo tani dine mamonos, havamina, I would have then thought, I would have thought, actually, Gezeilus v'chavelos is not limited to those cases. It includes other cases as well, cases of admissions and loans. And the only reason why the Mishnah states specifically Gezeilus v'chavelos mishum de ikar shloshe ksivi begzelos v'chavalos ksivi. Because in the Torah, we'll see where in a moment, when it says three judges, that is found in the context of gezelos v'chavalos. So therefore, had it said gezelos v'chavalos in the Mishnah, I would not necessarily have known that is meant as an exclusive category. I would have thought that that's really meant to include all dinim mamonos, and the only reason why the Mishnah articulates those categories as opposed to all others is because there's something special about them, namely that's exactly the example that's found in the Torah. So when we speak about three judges, so just to review, the Gemara starts by asking why is it that we need dinim mamonos and gezeilos v'chavalos, and Rabbi Avohu explains. Gezeilos v'chavalos comes to modify what types of dinim mamonos require three judges. Gezeilos v'chavalos do, hodos v'chavalos don't. The Gemara then says, well, why not just say one or the other? Just say dinim mamonos tam. Had it only said dinim mamonos, I would have thought that includes all. Fine, why not just say gezeilos v'chavalos? Even gezeilos v'chavalos, why it limits itself, I still maybe would have thought that it pertains to all categories. So that's why it says gezeilos v'chavalos, it says dinim mamonos and gezeilos v'chavalos. That's what's called the mahin katani. Dinim mamonos require three judges. What types of dinim mamonos require three judges? Only gezeilos v'chavalos. Hodos v'chavalos do not. Okay? So far, so good. What does it mean, hodos v'chavalos? So we explained it very briefly. Hodos, we said, mean admissions, and havalos, loans. So Rashi over here, if you take a look at Rashi, second Rashi in the Gemara, Hodos Vavos, says Rashi, Shnehen al iske milvehen. Both of these categories relate to loans. Hodos, Shabaladun be'edo hoda. Hodos means matters which require judges to sit and to adjudicate matters in which witnesses who claim that they saw someone admit. Shemevi edim sha'omrim befanenu hodala. Somebody brings witnesses to court who claim, they testify, that we heard this guy say that he owes somebody else money. Generally, we have a rule in halacha that a person can't testify against himself, right? Ein adam eis matzma rasha. So if a person comes to Bezdin and he confesses that he was mechal Shabbos, we're not going to punish him based on his own confession, even if a person confesses to murder. That doesn't mean if we have, you know, substantial evidence or reason to assume that the person's a threat to himself or others, we may have to deal with that separately. But legally, a person's confession is not the same as testimony coming from others. But there's an exception to that, and that's when it comes to hoda, when it comes to a person admits that he owes someone else money. That's called hodas baldin. The Gemara has an expression, hodas baldin kmei edim damni. When a person admits that he owes money, that has the power of 100 edim. That means something quite profound. That is, if a person makes a declaration that he owes someone money, either I damaged someone's property, I borrowed money and I haven't paid back, or even if a person says, I am declaring that I intend to give somebody a gift. My intention is to give him, you know, and so therefore I owe him $500. So I can't take that back later. It's essentially as a power of Adis. Now, if no one saw me lend money and I claim I did and then I claim later I paid him, that's something else, you know, that's called a pesha asu, a pesha itzer. I said I paid him, I said I owe him, and now I said I pay him. But if I say I owe somebody money, I can't claim later, you know, I don't owe money. I made it up, it's not really what I said. That's not true. We have witnesses that say that is what you said. So Rashi says that's what hodos are. Hava'os, shebaladim be'idah hava. This has to do with witnesses who claim that they saw what? They saw a loan. Shem idim b'faneinu aveil, that a person, before us, this person lent money. V'halokofa b'shtehen. In both cases, the defendant is denying the charge. He's saying, I never made such an admission, or I never borrowed money. V'chi hai lishna tuva ika b'hach b'chilta. And Rashi says, in this masechta we find many similar expressions. Hoda, acharada, havar, chava. He quotes the Gemara from later on, where hoda means, again, a person's own admission, and halva means where there are witnesses that claim that he borrowed money. Then Rashi says, "V'istmefarshi." There are those who explain hodaos shemoda b'miktas. Hodaos means something else. It means when there are witnesses that, let's say, claim this person borrowed money. Or forget witnesses. I take that back. Where there's a claim that the person owes money, and he admits to part of that claim. The guy says, I owe, you owe me $100. He says, no, I only owe you 50. And halvaos means shakofra kol. So there are those who say hodos means partial admission, and halvaos means complete denial. It says Rashi, Barishon Iker. I don't think that this pshat, says Rashi, is correct. Dimichte shnein eliske milvehen. Because, says Rashi, if that's true, really both of these are called havos. Because the kind of time of the Kaman is, the Gemara is going to say later on, we could stop here in Rashi, because Rashi is alluding to Gemara we haven't yet seen. But the point Rashi is making over here is that there may be different ways to explain what exactly hodos and havos mean. Rashi prefers the first explanation. But the bottom line is, the Gemara at this point is saying that when the Mishnah says you need three witnesses for Gezeilos, excuse me, three judges for Dinei Mamonos, that's limited to Gezeilos or Chavalos, to matters of theft and injury, does not apply to loans and admissions. Now the Gemara continues. Now the Gemara previously stated that the three judges that are found in the Torah are said in reference to Gezeilos. So now the Gemara feels the need to explain itself. And where do we see that? So back in the Gemara it says, Gezeilos, Tichsiv, it says in the Pasuk, V'nikra Val Habayis El Ha'elohim. So to just see that whole Pasuk, really, Parsha inside, take a look at the sheet, because the Gemara only quotes several words from a fragment from a Pasuk, but it's kedai to see the entire thing inside. This is source number one on the sheet. This comes from the 22nd chapter of Shemos, Parsha Mishpatim. Says the Pesukim, Ki yitein ish al reyehu kesef o kelim lishmor. A person gives somebody money or kelim or objects, clothing, whatever it is, to watch. Hugunav bebeis ha'ish. And this property is then stolen from the shomer, the person who accepted upon himself the responsibility of watching them. Im yimaseh ha'ganav yishal in shnayim. So if we are able to apprehend the ganav, so then we'll force him to pay double. That's called kefel. Right, when a person is caught having committed an act of theft, of gneva, so he has to pay what's called kato. Then the pasuk continues, in lo yimotzei haganav, let's say we don't find any thief. So we have a situation over here where a person accepted upon himself the responsibility to watch somebody else's property. A claim is made against him that you're not giving me the object back, and he says it was stolen. We can't find the ganav. We don't have any proof that it was stolen. So v'nikra balabayis el ho Elohim. So then we bring the balabayis, meaning the shomer, to Elohim. What does Elohim mean? Normally Elohim means God. Over here it actually means we bring it to the judge or the judges. Im lo shalach yado ben lechos riehu. We require him to take a shvuah, to swear that in fact he did not commit an act of negligence. He didn't take it for himself. He didn't do anything to destroy this property, because after all he's acknowledging that he was entrusted with this object to watch, and now he's claiming something went wrong and it wasn't his fault. He has to take a shul, he has to take a vow. Al kol dvar pesha, and he has to take a vow regarding any matters which potentially could be considered a matter of negligence on his part. And whether we're talking about shor, chamor, al sel, sama, we're talking about an ox, a donkey, a sheep, article of clothing, al kol aveda, any object, asher yomar, that he says ki uzeh, that he says this is it. We're going to talk about those words tonight. Ad ho Elohim yavod dvar shteyem. Their matter, their words, their arguments are brought before the judges. Asher yashiyun Elohim. And whoever the judges find to be guilty, whoever they convict, yishalim shneim l'reyu, or rather, if they find him to be guilty, then he's going to be required to pay double. So the pasuk over here is introducing the concept of one who's called a toein kainas ganav, meaning he accepted upon himself the responsibility to watch somebody else's property. He claims it was stolen. We then find out that he's lying. So now we're going to treat him as if he's the ganav, but we're going to make him pay kefel. That's basically, you know, the parasha. So what does this have to do with anything over here? So says the Gemara, this is how we know, this is the source for three judges, Min HaTorah. Where does it say three? It doesn't. What does it say? It says Elohim three times. It says only three times, that's Rashi over here, says, not on the sheet, but back in the Gemara, V'nikra Baal Bayis Elohim, Midikatsu B'parsha Elohim Shlosh Zimni, it says it three times, Nafkalan, later on we're going to see the Gemara says, the beginning of Shlosh, we require three judges. V'haikra K'siv B'shomer Chinam. Now truthfully, this parsha over here is talking about a Shomer Chinam, it's talking about a person who's accepted upon himself the responsibility to watch somebody else's property for free, And this guy's claiming, excuse me, it wasn't stolen, you did it. So in other words, it's a claim of Gezela. Before we go on in the Gemara, I just thought that given that we are very close to Rosh Hashanah at this point, it was good to just reflect very briefly upon this idea, this notion that Elohim, in this context, or in other places as well perhaps, as a reference to a judge. Of course, this is the season of judgment. Rosh Hashanah is the Yom HaDin. And, you know, what is this? What's the concept? First of all, you've noticed already that I'm saying Elohim repeatedly. Normally, if we give a shiur, we're talking about God. We're masked to say Hashem Elohim. Let's say Elohim. So here, in the context of this discussion, we don't have to do that because we're specifically talking about something which is whole. We're not talking about something which is kaddish, which is holy. We're not talking about the Shem Hashem. There's a different situation, but really the same word, if we're talking about, like it says in Kriyashma, over there, if you're citing that pasuk, you don't have to say Elohim. Elohim is what we do when we don't want to say God's name, you know, out of, you know, any, you know, sanctioned context. It's a bracha, or davening, something like that. So we say Elohim. But if you're talking about other gods, so we don't have to be respectful, right? There's no kedusha to this. We say Elohim. What's remarkable, it's the same word. So the Tartamima, on this pasuk actually, he quotes this refrain, source number two, he quotes this refrain, Parshas Vaschanan, it says, Mikan, from here, these words, Ad ho Elohim, that we just read, we see, the chol makum shnemar Elohim zumi deshadin. We see from here, the fact that it says, Ad ho Elohim, that whenever it says Elohim, it's a reference to Midas Hadin. That means even when we speak about God, even when we speak about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that word, Elohim, Elohim, is Midas Hadin. So the Torah Tumimah elaborates briefly on that. He says, Lehefech, this comes sort of the opposite of Midas Shem Havaya. This is the opposite of the Shem Yudke Vavke, the word that we pronounce Adonai, Shuhu Moral Midas Harachamim. That alludes to a different aspect of God's way of dealing with the world, and that is Midas HaRachamim, when God deals with the world with the measure of compassion. As the Pasuk says, again, very timely, Hashem, Hashem, Kel, Rachul, Mechanun. When we speak about God being a God of Rachamim, a God who is gracious and compassionate, we don't say Elohim, Elohim, or Hashem, Elohim, Rachul, Mechanun. We see Hashem, Hashem, Kel Rachum Mechanun. V'tam haraya mikan. So now the Torah to me asks the very question. How do we see that here? Because remember, the Sifrei says it comes specifically from this pasuk. So how do you see it here? So he says, Nir Rishum the cave and Elohim Shebekan Pirusha Dayanim. Since the context over here is judges, Kemuvur Pasuk HaKodim is very clear. That's the previous pasuk says, V'nikra Balabais El Elohim. What do you think that means? You bring him to God? No, it means you bring him to court. What is the job of a judge? A judge's job is to hear both sides and to make a ruling based on an unbiased, you know, objective opinion, one that does not factor in any feelings of compassion. As the pasuk says, "V'dalo sezar b'rivo," that we have to be very careful not to show any sort of favoritism or prejudice against a person who's a poor person, against a person of means, whatever it is, we have to be completely impartial. So it's very interesting. Says the Torah Tanima, how do we know that whenever it says the name Elohim in reference to God, that's Midas Hadin? We learn it from here, because the fact that the Torah uses the word Elohim to describe judges. And human judges, obviously, cannot be compassionate. And, you know, they can be compassionate outside of the courtroom. But inside the courtroom, we need them to be objective dayanim. V'chein kaimelon, as the Gemara in Ksuba says, in merachamim b'din, that a judge is not permitted to be a softy. I feel bad for this guy. V'chein amru, it says v'chovas adin yikov adin asahar. Gemara later on, you have an expression that the din, a justice, should literally pierce the mountain. In other words, it should stop at nothing. There should be no other considerations when it comes to executing justice. That's why when we find, let's say, in Psukim, references to God being the one who carries out justice, the name, the word that we find in the Torah, or Tanakh, is Elohim. Ki amishpat lelukim hu. That's for example, a pasuk that says, because justice is lelukim. It doesn't say ki amishpat lashem hu. It says ki amishpat lelukim. And now he says, and you know, this is, there's sort of a practical application to this. Ki kemishpispalim lakadosh baruch hu tov likro v'shem havaya. When we daven to Hashem, it's better not to call God Elokim, rather to use the Shem Yud Kei Vav Kei. Shumidas harachamim. Beit Maharach Bazei says, I'm not going to talk about this more now, but that's an interesting note, and that is that often, not always, and it's kedai to pay attention as to when we do and we don't, but often when we refer to God in the context of our davening, we use the Shem Yud Kei Vav Kei. And the reason is because that's midas harachamim. Va'ayin ol mashchasavti bazei, in the beginning of Parshas Bereishis. Why does this come up at the very beginning of Parshas Bereishis? Bereishis bara Elokim, right? Famous Chazal over there, so he talks about this more there. But Masha Enu maybe, now one more horror he makes over very short. Masha Enu maybe has Sifrei Kama Pasuk HaKodem, Benikor Rabbayis Elohim. Remember, it says Elohim three times in this Pasuk. First it says, Benikor Balabayis Elohim. You bring the Balabayis, the Shomer, to the judges. And then it says again, later on, Adho Elohim, and then Asher Yashiyun Elohim. So the Sifrei says, from which one of these mentionings of Elohim do we learn this idea that it's Midas HaDin? From the second one. It's very interesting. Like you wouldn't even notice it. So the Torah doesn't even notice it. He says, why is it that we point to the second mention of Elohim in this pasuk, not the first one? He says, Yeshlam Yishum D'Darshinan Shevinikrov Shvua V'Loludin. Because the Gemara later is going to tell us, what does it mean, V'Nikra Balabayis Elohim? It doesn't mean that you actually bring him to court. It means that he is required to take a shvua. So that's actually not the best example. If you want to really see where in here do we see that Elohim means din, it says ad you bring kihuze ad ho Elohim, when you bring him to the judges. That really means pashup shot in the pasuk means that means judges. So as we find ourselves, like I said, several days before Rosh Hashanah, this is a nice way to sort of prep ourselves in other ways and to stimulate our minds a little bit, because we're going to be seeing, you know, many references over the course of the davening over the next few days to Hashem Elokim, Elokim Hashem, to know when we say what we say. And again, especially as referred to the Slichos of here, Hashem Hashem Kerachum Echanum, because Hashem, you know, is Midas Erachim. Needless to say, I'm sure this is obvious to everyone over here, it's only one God, right? So it's not that there's Hashem and there's Elokim. You know, this is one God, but nevertheless, you know, we try to tap into the Midas HaRachamim, and we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu not to judge us exclusively through Midas HaDin. But in any event, we see that the word Elohim in this context means judges. So the Gemara says that's how we know that you need three judges. You need three judges because by Gzelos, it says Elohim, Elohim, Elohim. That explains Gzelos. What about Chavalos? Right, remember it says that Gzelos and Chavalos, the reason it doesn't say Gzelos v'Chavalos b'Shlosha is because, oh, it does say, but the reason it doesn't always say that is because then I would have said, really it applies to everything, but it only singles out Gzelos v'Chavalos because, why? Because the three judges in the Torah are found by Gzelos v'Chavalos. But that's not really true. The three judges are found by Gzelos, not Chavalos. Right? So how do we solve that problem? So that the Gemara goes on to say. So the Gemara says, Chavalos, Mali Chava Bagufo, Mali Chava Bamono. Very interesting expression. So Chavalos, the Gemara is basically saying it's the same as Gzelos. What's the difference if I damage your property or I damage your body? It's all the same. Wow, that's quite a leap. You could say that again, right? So Gary went like this. So the Gemara is basically saying, you're right. It only says in the Torah Elohim by Gzelos, but really conceptually Gzelos and Chavos are really the same. Namely, I am hurting you. Either I'm hurting you physically, or I'm hurting you financially. Right? I'm physically injuring you, or I'm monetarily injuring you. Says the Gemara, Mali Chava B'mono, Mali Chava B'gufa, Mali Chava. It's really the same thing. So the Gemara says conceptually, Gzelos and Chavos are linked, and therefore it's like it says three judges in the Torah by Gzelos v'Chavalos. It doesn't say three judges in the Torah by Hodos v'Avos, and therefore the Mishnah has to explicitly state that the three judges are only by what? By Gzeilus v'Chavalos and that, Hodos v'Chavalos. One interesting har over here, Tosos asks, the Gemara expression over here, Mali Chavav Aguf or Mali Chavav Mono seems backwards. Right? What's the right? We have sort of the main point and then the target point over here. Where were three judges found in the Torah? In reference to what? Gzeilus Mamon? Mamon. So it should really say, Mali Chava B'Mamono, Mali Chava B'Gufo. And Tosu says, not just because I say so, says Tosu, look, there are other Gemaras where you always find, that's the expression, Mali Chamavis, Mali Hocha, Mali Hossam. Because you start with the obvious, and then you move on to the less obvious. I mean, that's just the way we talk. So why does it say Mali Chava B'Gufo, Mali Chava B'Mamono? It should really say it the other way around. So Tosu says, you're right, except that Chavala, injury, that word is really, we associate it much more naturally with bodily injuries. And so therefore, the Gemara says, Mali Chava B'Gufa, Mali Chava B'Mano. But the idea is the same. And that is that Gemara is basically saying, Gezeres V'Chavalos are really, they're like linked. They're basically like sort of more or less the same thing. Okay. So now the Gemara continues, Olamai. Now what do you mean when you say that Hodos V'Chavalos are not included in this idea of three? What do you mean by that? What's it not included? Delobin and Shlosha? You mean to say that three are not required? So you need, let's say, less than that? Two or one? Is that what you mean to say? V'hamar Rabbavo, didn't Rabbavo teach, Shnayim Shadanu Dinei Mamonos, L'divrei HaKol, and Dineim Din? Did Rabbavo himself not teach that if two judges judge in any matter, they're din is not a din. What does it mean their din is not a din? It means whatever conclusions they reach are not upheld. The matter is considered to be, it's still considered an open case. It has not been resolved. In order to resolve a dispute properly in front of judges, we require at least three judges. Now, there's something a little misleading about this Gemara, and that is the Gemara says, L'divrei HaKol ein dinei din. That sounds like what? It sounds like no one out there is going to say that anything less than three judges is sufficient. We're going to see later on that that's not so. There actually are opinions that you can have fewer than three judges. The problem is that Rav Avoh doesn't say that, and Rav Avoh is the one who's giving the answer now. So it has to work according to that opinion. Rav Avoh, you remember, said, the reason why the Mishnah says, Dinei Mamonos and then Gezeilus V'Chavalos, is to say that you don't always need the same thing for all cases. So what's that thing you don't need? So if you mean to say we don't need three judges, that can't be. Because the Rav Avoh himself says anything less than three is no good. Two is no good. And it's Kav HaChomer that one's no good. Ella. It's not a Kav HaChomer. Okay, good, fair. Why?
Because two, you have one going
in
each direction.
Very good. There's an expression later on that Bezin of two is called a Bezin Chosuf. Right, so correct. It's not necessarily a Kav HaChomer. Good. Strike that from the record. But the Gemara says, if the Gemara seems to assume that two knows good, then he's not going to accept one either. So Ella says the Gemara de lobe inan mumchin. So the Gemara, what Rav Avoh means to say is not that you don't need three judges. You do need three judges, but they don't have to be mumchin, right? This coming Sunday, hopefully, we'll all say Hataras Nedarim, right? What do we do when we say Hataras Nedarim? We sit down, we stand up in front of three. Usually, forgive me, three Amaratim, right? You can include me in that. Three people don't really know much about Hataras Nedarim, and they're not, fluent in the whole sugya of Hataras Nedarim. And what do we say? Shimuna Dayonim Mumchin. Right? It's a funny thing. It's the Sarah of Rosh Hashanah, and we're trying to, be honest, and, sort of own up to, the falsehoods upon which we live our life, and we say, Shimuna, please listen up, Dayonim Mumchin. But it's just a nice expression. What does it mean to be a mumche? So there are two elements to mumche. Again, this is also going to be a big subject later on, not for tonight, but just briefly. What does it mean to be a mumche when it comes to din? An expert, you could use that, the concept of mumche applies in other areas of halacha. We speak about a shochet, let's say, is a mumche. What does it mean when it comes to dayanus to be a mumche? Two things we're looking for. What'd you say?
Smicha.
Okay, so number one is smicha. And smicha means the real smicha, right? The real smicha, the unbroken chain, going all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. And the other one, so it should be obvious, but and that is, just being truly an expert, having a lot of experience, a lot of knowledge, You could have a lot of knowledge of being an expert and not necessarily have smicha, and I suppose, you know, vice versa. Mumcha over here means, probably means having, you know, one or both of those qualities. So the Gemara basically says that Rav Avohu is saying that Gezeilus and Chavolus require three mumchim. Hodos Vavolus don't require three mumchim. So what would you have? You'd have three, what are they called? Hedyotos. What's a hedyot? So we don't yet know, you know, what if anything you need to have to qualify as being a dayan hedyot. But apparently it's not on the same level. It's not on the same level, and that's sufficient for Hodos Vavolus. Why do you think that Gezeilus v'Chavolus require a higher level? So one answer is, it's because, again, because one is found in the Torah and the other doesn't. So we're going to see this in a moment, but just, you know, can anybody think of any reasons just already off the top of the head? Why maybe require a higher level of expertise, of knowledge? Okay. We'll see in a moment in the Gemara. Okay, so before we go on in the Gemara, so I know we're covering a lot of ground inside tonight, but again, I don't see really a better way to do this. Then we'll come back, we'll look at some of the finer points. Before we go on to the next Gemara, there's something we need to introduce, a very strange idea. If you learn the Gemara beforehand, so it may not seem completely strange and foreign, but it's a strange idea that we must sort of introduce before this. Okay, so we're gonna take a look at a couple of other sources on the page, and then we'll come back to the Gemara. So let's look at source number four. Source number four are psukim that come from later on in chapter Chav Beis, parak 22 of Shemos. Several psukim later, it says the following: Im kesef haves ami. The Gemara says that this is one of three places where it says im in the Torah, but doesn't really mean if; it means when. When you lend money to a person who needs it, as an imach, to a poor person among you, lo sielo konosha, you shouldn't be like a creditor to him, lo simuna lov neshech, you shouldn't charge him interest. Im chabol tachbol samasra yecha, ad bo ha-shemesh tishivenu lo. And if you need to take his garment as security for the loan, make sure to return it to him before nightfall. Ki hik susolo vada, hisim la solo oroba me yishkav. Because he needs this in order to sleep at night. What else is he going to wear when it's cold outside? When he cries out to me, he says, Hashem, I will hear him and I will have compassion on him. That won't be good for you. In other words, if you lend a guy money, that doesn't give you right to abuse him, that doesn't give you right to take everything that he needs, literally the shirt off his back. You have a right to, you know, collect collateral, but you have to make sure that it does not affect him too adversely. So, again, it's a very simple reading of these psukim. Now, comes along the Gemara in Bava Kamma. Again, hopefully this will sound familiar to some of us who have learned Bava Kamma before, and introduces the following fascinating idea. Omer Rav Chiya bar Rabba, Omer Rav Yochanan. Hatoin tanez ganav v'pikadon, enu chayiv ad shiyichpar b'miktsas v'yod b'miktsas. Says the following. Let's say a person, again, this goes back to the case beforehand, a person has been given something to watch, and he later claims that it was stolen from him. So does he have to take a shvuah? So, says Rav Chiya bar Rabba, Rav Yochanan, he's not chayiv unless he's what? Kofer b'miktsas v'yod b'miktsas. Unless he denies part of the claim and he admits part of it. What's the reason? My taima. The Amar Kra, because the Pasuk says, ki huzeh. The Pasuk, what Pasuk says, ki huzeh? Well, we just saw that Pasuk before. And if you look back at source number one on the page, it gave the whole story. A person gave something else to somebody else to watch, and he was watching, and he claims it was stolen. They go to the judges, and then what does he say? Asher yomar ki hu zeh. What do those words mean? Ki hu zeh. How would you translate those words? What?
That's mine.
That's right. So how does that mean? How is that a partial admission? Ki hu zeh. That sounds like that's mine. It's a claim for all, and the guy's denying all. So Chazal looks at those words ki huzeh, and they say, what does ki huzeh mean? What? This, right. This is yours, or this is mine. Right. You know, he's acknowledging part of the claim, but not all of it. That because otherwise it would just say ki zeh. Right. What's this ki huzeh? just for the Gemara doesn't explain exactly what the diuk is over here. I found something very interesting. I hit gold because I have this Masifta Gemara which doesn't have everything. They have a lot in here, but doesn't have everything. But sometimes, you're looking for things, you don't find it here. So I looked around, I just got lucky. I took a sefer of myself, the Pardes Yosef, and I found a very interesting explanation of the expression Kiuzah. Let's skip to the bottom of the page before we go on to the Gemara, because I think you'll find this very nice. Ki hu zeh, Chazal omru, dekoy amodah b'miksas. Chazal tell us that this expression Kiuzah means a partial admission. U'b'sheim Rav Avram ben Hagra, I found from the Rav Avram, the son of the Gra, Ra'isi ki hu nistar, and zeh is nokach. That the word hu is something that is literally hidden, meaning it's not here at the moment, it's you're speaking about something in the abstract. And zeh is nokach. Zeh is talking about something that's here at the moment, something that's extant. V'remez ki al kol al mitzas yachish v'towin hu nistar. So it sounds like in this pasuk, like the person is denying part of it by saying hu, which means something that's not here. V'amitzas yo, then part of the claim he's acknowledging by saying zeh. And he quotes another source, which I don't know, Shemilas, hu, morehefech ustira, shayidai lomar kizeh. When he says hu, it sounds like he's arguing a little bit, because it would have been sufficient to say zeh, kizeh. V'hu zeh, when he says hu, so this comes, listor divrei hatohen, this comes toward as an argument against the one who's making the tanya. Shatohen, the guy claims, in delavado, rak, oh, the guy's saying, this is not it, you owe me more. And he says, no. Rak huzeh, v'lo hazulas. He says, I acknowledge this, but not the other. So that's the idea of huzeh. Now watch, this is beautiful. You're going to love this. Then he quotes, Hagon Rav Moshe Shapiro Milublin. Everybody knows Rav Moshe Shapiro was the one who started the Daf Yomi. He says, what did it say in Megillas Esther? Right before the climax of the Megillah, where Esther invites Haman and Mordechai to the party, and she says to Achashverosh, won't you please spare my life? Somebody's trying to kill me and my people. And what does Achashverosh say? Mi hu zeh ve'ezahu. The hikshu, the question that people ask on this pasuk is, Achashverosh ba'asmo hiskim la'atas Haman. What's Achashverosh saying? Who did such a thing? Achashverosh himself was a bad guy. He signed off on this whole deal. Vatasho, now he has a chutzpah to say, Mi hu zeh ve'ezahu. Rata Achashverosh ha'yistonik Haman. He was the same. He was the anti-Semite just like Haman was. The Gemara Megillah Tesvav says that Mashal Latel v'Choros, like one's the big hill, one's the smaller hill, but they were it was a tag team. So watch this very sharp explanation. Rak Achashverosh rotsa lehizvada im Esther teda mihu zeh hatzor harashi. Achashverosh was testing. Does Esther really know who the real bad guy is? Does she think I'm the real bad guy, or does she think he's the real bad guy? V'shal, he says, therefore mihu zeh ve'ezahu. She says to him, who is the zeh and who is the who? Va'ansa, and she says, ish tsar va'oyev Haman hara hazeh. So he says, Haman is the zeh, he's the galah, he's the real bad guy, v'tucha lahavim ki atahu. And you can understand that you're the second one. That's so beautiful. So basically, he explains this idea in who and zeh, when it's nistar and nocha, that Esther says, Chashver says, me, who's ever is a who? Who's the real bad guy? And she said that Haman is Ish. That's right. And by the way, there's a reference earlier in the Megillah, right? It says, Vahiv me Achashverosh, who Achashverosh? I don't know. There he is again. Achashverosh is the who. He's the Nistar. He's the guy, behind the scenes, but doesn't make him a tzaddik. He's also an Oyev, but he's the Oyev who, as opposed to Haman, who's the Haman Ara Hazeh. Okay, so getting back to over here, ki hu zeh, Chazal understood, means a partial admission. A modeh b'miksas, it's a partial admission. So the Gemara, again, in Bava Kama says, so first Rabbi Yochanan says that a person who's a tzoin tanez ganav, that he's claiming something was stolen from him when he was supposed to watch it for someone else, if he's modeh b'miksas, he's chayef. And the Gemara now says this goes against Rabbi Yosef. The Omer of Chibar Yosef, Eruv Parshios Kasav Khan. This is a very strange notion. You'll forgive me if this, if the concept sounds a little strange, but we'll try to deal with it tonight. Eruv Parshios Kasav Khan, which literally means there's a mixture of Parshios over here. Apparently, in order to understand what's really going on over here, you have to take the phrase Ki Hu Zeh from here. Here means source number one. You gotta, oh, today we have a modern term for this. You have to cut and paste several psukim later. Cut and paste. Erev Parshas Kosav Kan. B'chiksiv Kiuzeh. When it says Kiuzeh, it actually doesn't belong there. It belongs a few psukim later by the Milvah. Right? This is the point. I teach eighth graders in the morning. You know, this is the point in the Gemara where an eighth grader would say, I am done. Forget it. This is hard enough where everything is where it belongs. Now you're going to tell me that I have to take these three words from this parasha. I finally understand it. Cut it and put it elsewhere. Forget it. I'm not interested. But hold on. I mean, Baruch Hashem, the whole Torah is not Erev Parshas. But over here, this is an Erev Parshas. It requires a little, you know, splicing and pasting elsewhere. Why is that? Says Gemayshna Malva. Why is it that when it comes to a loan, a partial admission is considered worse than a complete admission? So the Gemara now says a famous svara. This idea is found in other Gemaras as well. The Amar Rabba. Rabba explains. Rabba says, why is it that the Torah says that a person who admits to a partial claim has to take a shvur? Just to state something which may not be obvious to everyone over here, you know, we think about a person going to court, he has to swear, right? You know, it seems at least, I don't spend much time in court myself, but it seems from TV, every time you go to court, you know, you raise your right hand, you swear to tell the whole truth, not the but truth, etc. But in Torah courts, it's not necessarily the way it works. But in Torah, there are actually very few cases where you're required to take a shvur. Most cases, you issue a claim, and then we ask the witnesses, if there are witnesses, what's going on over here. But you don't typically have to take a shvuah. There are several times where the Torah imposes a shvuah. One of them is, over here, a mode of a mikdash. In other words, if a person claims I owe him $100 and I deny the whole thing, I say, what are you talking about? I don't owe you $100. It's not true. I don't have to take a shvuah. I don't have to take a shvuah to prove that I'm telling the truth. I could just deny it and that's it. But if a guy says I owe him $100 and I say, I don't owe you 100, but I owe you 50. But it doesn't have to be exactly half, but that's the, you know, classic case. I owe you 50. I'm admitting I owe you part. So suddenly the Torah says, ooh, now you have to take a shvur. So why is that? So comes along Rabbah and he says the following svara. Chazaka. We have a chazaka, which means we make the following assessment about of human psychology. This is not a chazaka based on doing something three times. This is an insight into human nature. Ain other meis panav b'fnei bachova. Most anybody in this world would not be able to be meis panim before his bachova. What does it mean meis panim? Achei shechatar l'fanecha azus meitach. Close enough. Not quite the same thing. Be brazen. A person cannot be so brazen in front of bachova. A guy who was so nice, he lent me money. Says Rashi over here, he did a tova for me. He helped me out in my time of need, and now I'm going to go ahead and look at him in the face and say, what are you talking about? You never gave me anything. You're completely lying. Most people can't do that. Maybe some people, but most people, they can't do that. That's such a chutzpah to look at a guy who helped me out and just, you know, lie to his face. V'hai b'kulei b'ayu d'nechperei. This guy really, he would have, if he could have brought himself to do it, he would have denied everything. He would have said, I don't owe you anything. But he couldn't bring himself to do it. Why couldn't he bring himself to do it? Because it's so hard to do that. The reason he didn't deny everything is Mishum de Ein Adamei is part of it. Can't do it. So why didn't he admit everything? Uvakule by the Lodile. So then really, he should have just owned up to the fact that he borrowed money and paid him back. The reason why he denied part of it is Sava, he said, so I admit now that I own the whole thing, they're going to pay the whole thing. The problem is, I don't have all the money now. So Ishtamitli Miya Hashta, so I'll give him a little bit what he wants now. When I get more money later, I'll pay him the rest. So the rabbi's saying, look what's going on in the mind of this person. He's a normal guy. He's not a crook. He's not an evil person. He's a guy who finds himself in a tough spot. He borrowed money. The guy wants his money back. He can't look him in the face and completely deny it. He can't do that. If he could, he would, but he can't. Why doesn't he just admit he has everything? Because he doesn't have the money now. So what he does is he says, fine, I admit I owe you part of it. So the Torah smells a rat. The Torah smells something's not good over here. Look at this. You see the guy, he's quibbling. That's it. Hilchach Rama Rachmana Shvulave. Therefore, the Torah says you have to take a shvua. Kihechid delogile bechule. This probably, for most people, will be enough to force the guy to admit he's not telling the truth. because people are scared of taking a shua. People are scared of swearing on the, you know, of taking an oath in court, something that's a lie. V'gavi milvahu de'ikol le'meimer hachi. This is only true when it comes to a loan. About gavi pikadon meyuz meyuz. When it comes to a pikadon, so unfortunately, it is possible for people to be really brazen with chutzpah and lie. If you come to my house and you say, "Can you do me a favor? Can you please, you know, watch my donkey for a week? I'm going to the Bahamas. Can you please watch my donkey?" "Yeah, sure, no problem." "How much are you paying me?" "Nothing." "Yeah, no problem." And then, you know, a few days into the Shemirah, I don't know, I decide I wanted to sell the donkey. It's not a nice thing to do. And then you come back, and I say it was stolen, or I say it was, I say, "I don't know what you're talking about." So over here, Rabbah reasons, you know, there are people in the world who can do that. But how do you look at a guy and do that? After all what? He didn't do me a tova. Not only did he not do me a tova, he had the chutzpah to go and ask me if I could watch his donkey when he goes off to the Bahamas. So I don't know this guy anything. Meiz umeiz. So says the Gemara, that's a svara why a modeh b'mitzvah requires a shvua. Now, what does this have to do with anything? This is very important what's happening over here. So basically, I'm sorry? So that's a question. What Eir Parshas means exactly? My focus over here, Rashi tells us whether this is a link or a complete cut and paste. But before we get to there, what's going on over here is the following: the Gemara in Bava Kamma introduces this concept that, at least according to one opinion, Rav Chiya bar Yosef, there's Eir Parshios, which means these two Parshios are not quite what they seem, and you have to take this concept of Kiyuzef from the three Dayanim and apply it down here. So now the Gemara, now with this background, hopefully the Gemara will make a little more sense. Now the Gemara says the following: my kosava, what does Rabbi Bohu hold? Rabbi Bohu just got through explaining to us that begazelos v'chavolos, you require three expert judges. For hados v'avos, you don't require three expert judges. Why? Because gazelos v'chavolos, it says in the Torah, three expert judges. Hados v'avos don't. So he says, ikosava eir parshas kusukan. If he agrees with this notion that these two parshas are really all mixed up, and what says in one applies to the other, so then, so you should actually require expert judges. Why? Because what we see is hodos v'havos is linked with gezeilos v'chavolos. So the same din should apply. If ikosava eir parshios, and if he says no, these two parshas are separate. We're not cutting and pasting at all. So then, shlosha lamali. So then why do you need three at all? You shouldn't need three at all. You know, the whole concept of three comes from this parsha. The whole concept of mumchen comes from this two parsha. So what's this idea of you need three but not three mumchen? Imanavshach. If you hold eir parshios, you should need three mumchen. And if you don't hold eir parshios, you shouldn't even need three. So says the Gemara, another, I guess, so many important ideas that are being introduced here tonight, says the Olam, Liolam, really, Kosavar, he holds Eir Parshios Kosav Kan. Really holds there is a mixture of Parshios, that they are linked. Ubedin hu, Viliboy Nami Mumchen. Really, technically speaking, the Igor Adin, you should have required three expert judges for all Dini Mamanis cases, including Hodos Vavos. Vahai Delovi Idin Mumchen. The only reason why we say it's not required, even though really it should be required, is Mishum Derbe Chanina. Based on an idea from Rabbi Chanina. The Amr Rabbi Chanina, Devar Torah, Rabbi Chanina says, on a Torah level, Echad Dini Mamanos, Echad Dini Nefashos, Bedrisha V'Chakira. On a Torah level, all matters of din, whether they're money matters or capital cases, all require Drisha V'Chakira. Again, another big concept that's going to be the subject of much discussion later. Drisha V'Chakira means a very thorough and complete interrogation of the witnesses, that we ask them lots of questions. Rashi gives us a little preview here, but later on, the Gemara is going to talk about what are drishos on hakiros, but we have to ask lots of questions to the witnesses. We actually try to catch them lying. We don't try to make them lie, but we want to make sure that we're not being duped over here. So there are a whole series of questions that we ask them, and that obligation applies by Dina Mamanis and Dina Fashos. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Mishparachad Yelachem. The Pasuk says that there's one rule of laws that apply in all areas of Jewish law. Now, that's not really true, because We know there are differences. But on a certain level, there's one uniform system that applies. Like one constitution applies the whole way across. What does the whole pasuk say over there? Ma'ke behema yishamena, or ma'ke adam, you must. Mishparefid yilachem. When it comes to monetary cases, when it comes to capital cases, there's one system of law. So interrogation of the witnesses should apply everywhere. Why then do we say that when it comes to money matters, we don't completely grill the witnesses, we don't keep them there all day asking them a million questions? Because we're concerned about the impact that that may have on people who need to borrow money. Look at the sensitivity of Chazal. Chazal said, wait, if we're so strict with and so, you know, thorough and comprehensive with our interrogation of witnesses, that's going to discourage people from lending money. Because guy's going to think, why am I going to lend money? If I lend money to this guy and he doesn't pay me back, I'm going to have to sue him in court. I'm going to sue him in court, I'm going to bring witnesses. I'm going to bring my witnesses, and what are the judges going to do? They're going to disqualify them. They're going to ask so many questions, they're going to say, forget it, you guys are lying. They're not lying, but they're going to be thrown out because they're going to trip them up on some technicalities, and that's it, I'm never going to get my money back. So what? Well, so what? So then the next time a guy needs money, I'm not going to be so generous. So in order to literally not close the door, lock the door, b'fnei lovin, in order to make sure that people remain generous to others in time of need, we make it easier for them to collect later. We do not want to make the collection process too complicated. So says the Gemara, that's exactly why three mumchim are not required over here. Because if a guy knows the only way I'm going to collect this money is if I have to appear for three experts, yeah, I have to go into the big city and I have to wait there and I'm going to miss a whole day's work. It's not worth it. If I could take the matter in front of three hegeltos, you know, that's not such a big deal. That doesn't require the same investment, the same risk, rather, on my part, and so therefore I'll be more generous to loan the guy money. Yeah.
Does it mean to say that Chazal relaxed the standard of the Torah, or that the Torah purposely is being sympathetic to
them? It does seem that Chazal relaxed the din of the Torah. That the Torah is saying that we require a very, you know, high level of judges, and kidei shelo tino delas bifnei lovin, Chazal relaxed those laws. I had to do such a thing. So it's similar to a discussion we had last week about Prisbo a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, that there are, when it comes to money matters, so we see the Chazal, you know, had, you know, tremendous power in order to make sure that the community was able to function properly. This is a sort of a tikkun olam. There are other things that are instituted, shelo tino delas bifnei lovin, we're actually going to see a couple of them right now. So we've seen two already tonight. One is the fact that drisha v'chakira is not required. By the way, we still ask the witnesses questions. There are different types of questions. The bedikos, you know, we ask them. So we ask them some basic questions. But the real complicated ones, the ones that would, you know, potentially cause even honest, truthful witnesses to be disqualified, those we don't ask when it comes to dinim amnes cases. And additionally, we're seeing over here that we're sort of relaxing the standards, we're lowering the standards when it comes to the quality of judges that are necessary to hear. So we've seen a lot tonight, actually a little less than I thought we were going to see, but that's okay. No complaints over here. We've seen a lot. I don't know. You know, I sort of apologize because, you know, it was, you know, we there was no other way to work my way. There's no other way to work in my mind. There's no other way to get through the sugya. We actually have a few more lines to read, and then, like I said, we'll go back and we'll just try to, you know, take a closer look at some of the finer points that we saw here tonight. But the most important ideas and concepts that were introduced this evening, the concept of obviously requiring three judges, the difference between Gezeos v'Chavolos and Hodos v'Avos, and this whole idea of Irur Parshios, this idea that we have this mixture of Parshios. Now, a question that we didn't deal with, but I'll just tell you to think about if you want, and if you really want, you can also take a look at the other side of the page over here, is this whole idea of Irur Parshios. First of all, just from a sort of a just a hashkafic perspective, conceptually, without getting into the nitty-gritties of this, what does that mean? What does that mean? The concept of ein muktam u'chor b'Torah, I can swallow that idea, that not everything in the Torah is necessarily presented in the exact chronological sequence that it occurred. That That's a notion that's easier to digest. You know, it's a big debate among the Mefarshim, but fine. But Eir Parshios, really a very strange idea. What does that even mean, that you can take a pasuk from here and say it doesn't apply there at all, or it doesn't apply exclusively over there, applies here? It's very different than Gzeirah Shavah. Gzeirah Shavah is very different. Gzeirah Shavah says, these two mitzvahs are linked. You know, find some common features. But over here, we're saying no. We're saying these words, Kiyuz, they really belong elsewhere. That's a strange notion to begin with. And then specifically, why over here, of all places, what was it that either prompted Chazal, Rabbi Yosef, who's the one who says this, and what made these two parshios that we read have in common with each other? The parsha of the Shomer, the Toin Tanis Ganov, and the one of the person borrowing the money. So we're going to have to, you know, take a closer look at that next time. Several months ago, I didn't realize the time, but I accepted an offer to speak in another community next Wednesday night. I was just looking at my calendar, and I regret it for other reasons, but I committed to it. I forgot. So I can't give the shiur next Wednesday night. Next Thursday night already is Erev Shabbos Shuvah, so I'm not going to do that. The following Wednesday is Yom Kippur, so I'm sorry because we just started, but we'll meet on Chol Moed. I hope that works for everybody. If not, you know, like I said, it'll be recorded, but we'll meet 3 weeks from tonight on Chol Moed Sukkis. And I'll try to present a good review at the time, so we won't have to do this all over again then. Okay, sure.